Is Professor Zygote still in his secret laboratory?
Yes, he shut himself in there for 5 days working on his new biochemical discovery.
Hasn't he eaten?
No, I tried to slip trays of food under the door, but they don't fit.
There's only one thing that will fit, a package of Carnation Instant Breakfast.
You're right, let's try it.
Professor, we've brought you some breakfast.
How many times do I have to tell you? I don't want any greasy bacon, cold eggs, and soggy toast all squashed under my door.
But Professor, this is different. Just listen to what's in it. Sucrose, sodium silicoalluminate, sodium ascorbate, ferric orthophosphate, riboflavin, pyridoxine hydrochloride.
I never realized how hungry I was.
Give it to me.
Wait, Professor, you have to mix it with milk.
What's that?
Supersaturated homogenized calcium lactose.
Why didn't you say so?
Carnation Instant Breakfast. Lots of delicious flavors. Just mix a package with supersaturated homogenized calcium lactose.
What's that?
Start off your day.
You wrote a book about steak.
Yes.
And now you're the guy who's written an entire book about flavor.
Yes.
Is there a connection between the two?
Absolutely, yeah, because it was the steak book that brought me here for two reasons. When I set out to write the steak book,
Basically, you traveled the world and ate steak.
Yes, and I did not care. I mean, part of me cared about whether this was an ethically produced steak. Part of me cared about things like the carbon footprint and the nutrition. But really, I just wanted to write a book for steak lovers. Who's got the best steak? I was expecting this steak because I carried that prejudice we all have against flavor. I thought, well, the best steak is going to be, it might kill me. It's going to be mean to the cow. It's going to have a worse carbon footprint than Saudi Arabia. And it's going to be mean to my body. And what I found is the steak that I like the best is grass-fed steak when it's well done. And it was a total shock because grass-fed beef has a much better nutritional profile. It's more nutrient dense. The cow leads a much better life. There's no carbon footprint. So it's this odd win-win-win, which I really didn't expect. But there was another interesting insight when I did that book, because grass farmers talk about bricks. The other people who talk about bricks are wine growers. That has to do, they say, with the dissolved sugar in grapes or grass.
There was a fellow who just recently broke the brick-breaking record. With his hand.
But that was me.
Yeah, Larry is the guy with the big hand over
yeah,
the banana shop. They had to stop you after
27
bricks.
127 times.
Yeah.
I forgot because I was using my head there toward the end.
Right,
you
were doing it to raise money for a charitable cause, however, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. That's right.
What was the cause? Could you
idiot,
come up
for the Idiots Fund?
The Idiots Fund.
Yeah, the Idiots Fund.
I see.
I'm not an idiot myself.
And, talk to us here.
Let me through the door.
Come on.
Get
the door, please.
Only get to use that door once or twice per show, you know.
You've got a garbage can on your foot.
Oh, yeah. That's
just
my,
kick it
no,
off.
No, no, no. That's a garbage masher.
Oh, there.
All right, there we go. I used that to mash up the garbage, you know.
Good.
How many bricks can a brick breaker break when a brick breaker breaks a few bricks? Yes.
Boy, that's a brick. Well, a fella like myself, you know. I prefer to take the bricks in their natural state when they're in a building, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these kind of sissy, kind of faggy guys, they like to break them when they're out of the buildings. But
yeah.
I do it on the whole buildings. Bam, like that, and a brick breaks and a whole building comes down.
You're the guy who was responsible for breaking the bank just last week, weren't you?
Yeah, that's me.
Is that the one at Monte Carlo?
No, that's my name.
Oh.
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo. You do this act, then?
Yeah.
You're involved?
I'm not acting, no.
No?
No, this is real.
Oh.
It was a chemical pig exchange bank, I believe it was.
Mm. Monty, I wonder if you could answer a question here for me, since you're an expert on this.
Okay.
Monty.
Prof.
What do you guys call or think about a guy who's a strike-breaking, a brick-breaking strike?
We would think that he had struck out, certainly, in the eyes of his fellow workers.
Workers?
Workers, yeah.
Excuse me.
I didn't want to reveal to you they're my working-class background.
Yes, yeah, right.
I think you're leaking.
Oh.
Could you stand over there in the next to that bucket?
Here. Yeah.
Good. Carol, that's better.
Keep him off mic for a while, would you? It's like keeping him
Where's
off
Where's Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, I'm going to get you.
Yeah, he's leaking over there. That's all right. Just don't let him.
And the grass farmers who want those cows to eat the really good grass are always talking bricks, bricks, bricks. And one time I approached a very prominent figure in the movement, and I said, well, you guys are always criticizing the big feedlots for jamming corn down cattle's throat. Mm. But all you're talking about is bricks. So you're talking about a simple carbohydrate versus a complex carb. You're no better than the feedlot guys. And he goes, you know, that's a really good point. But the truth is, when we measure bricks in grass, we're not just measuring sugar. They talk about sugar. It's a measure of the dissolved nutrients. So in grass and grapes, sugar is indicative of total nutrition. You get more minerals, you get more antioxidants, you get more vitamins. So it's kind of a marker of this food approaching a state of nutritional perfection. And that made me rethink the whole way we approach flavor. The interesting thing about cows is they've never taken a course in nutrition. They never read Wheat Belly. And yet they can walk across a field and so perfectly meet their nutritional needs. A pregnant cow has a higher protein requirement than a steer, for example. It somehow knows to eat more alfalfa than ryegrass. How does it know that? It doesn't even know that there are names, alfalfa, ryegrass, legume. It's guided by what it finds delicious. And this told me something's going on with flavor. We're looking at this all wrong. We're running away from something that may actually have the potential to really help us out. So that's what got me on this course of asking, it seems to me, the question no one's really asked about food, which is, why is food flavorful in the first place? There was an incredible series of experiments at Utah State University that demonstrated how this system works in goats. I'll give you a quick example. They're complex, bizarre experiments, but they're so interesting. A behavioral ecologist named Fred Provenza, he took two pens of goats and he made them deficient in phosphorus. He gave them a diet that had everything they needed, but not phosphorus, which is an essential mineral. You need it for like cellular metabolism and your brain needs it, bones need it. And over time, these goats became deficient in phosphorus. This was a huge stress in their bodies. If it continued, they were going to die. What he then did is he exposed them to flavorings. One day, he'd give them feed that was a special feed that was flavored like coconut. And then right after they ate the coconut-flavored feed, he'd put a tube down their throat and drench their stomach in phosphorus. So they experienced the flavor of coconut, and then nutritionally, they got coconut. What he was trying to do is set up an association in the body so that when the brain tasted coconut, it got phosphorus. The next day he would do it with maple. But when he did it with maple, they wouldn't get phosphorus, they would only get water.
Okay.
So then later on, when he would give them a choice, they were still phosphorus deficient, what would you like, coconut or would you like maple? And the goats would always go for the coconut. Even though there was no actual phosphorus in the coconut, it was the association, he put it in the stomach while putting the flavor in their mouth.
Right, so we tricked the goats to think that coconut gave them what their bodies were craving.
They learned that when I eat coconut, I get phosphorus. Now you might be thinking, well, maybe goats just like coconut, because who doesn't love coconut? Well, that's why he had the second pen, because over in that pen, he switched it. Maple was associated with phosphorus and coconut was associated with water. And what did those goats like? They liked the maple. So what he demonstrated is that we have this ability to link up flavors with the nutrients that they indicate. And goats do a really good job. They have the same problem as we do. They live up in the mountain, there's all these different kinds of plants growing. How do they get what they need? And the answer is flavor. What a goat considers delicious is what the goat needs. And they have an unbelievable ability to do this.
Smokers, doesn't this sound familiar?
Hold it right there.
No, I think I'll hold it over here.
If I knew just what I had to say. Oh. I'm Nick Danger with another world of advice for you men. You know, here in the radio studio, it's all dinge and dinger, but when that on-the-air sign goes off, I'm just plain Ed Eagle, actor, Indian, and second-class citizen. You know where I come from, most folks like to pass around a pipe because the spirits in the air around us can get overloaded from the stress and strain that most of us working men call real life. So when I get home, I like to fill up my calabash with a fresh load of goat's head pipe tobacco. Light a match with my sharp thumbnail and enjoy one heck of a good smoke. It doesn't just blow the brimstone out of your brain, it appeases all those friendly spirits right on down the line.
So get with it, man. Buy a pouch today. And remember what the folks back on the reservation say.
Goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe.
Yes, it's devilishly good.
All right, sir. May I take your hat and goat?
Yes.
Hand me my sword flask, Violet. Oh, what use this steel against a ghost? A ghost? Me thought you spoke of goats upon the battlement.
Nay! Ghost, me lord!
Well, be he goat or ghost of goat or both, I'll spirit's need to goad my spirit on!
Take speed, my lord!
So the goats are learning, they're learning as they go.
They're learning as they go.
And the avenues for learning were feedback. Subtle, unconscious conversations among their flavor-sensing instruments, their digestive systems, circulatory systems, nervous systems, and on and on. But humans aren't goats, right?
There is an old experiment that tested this by a woman named Clara Davis.
Here's Mark Schatzker again.
I think it was 1928. She got a bunch of very young toddlers and babies from, you know, women who couldn't care for their children. She brought these very, very young children into a hospital ward, and she let them have access to a diet where they made the decisions. I think there was about 40 different foods. They were presented to the children.
I wish I could see Clara Davis. She matches Dr. Erica Kramer, unsung hero of the gas chromatograph, in unimpressive stature and equally impressive genius. Clara Davis was short, wore heels, was regularly the only woman at the medical conferences where she presented her findings. Her experiment remains the only one of its kind ever done. She gathered infants and toddlers and, to feed them, presented them with about 40 foods every day.
And there was absolutely no, you know, you should eat this, you shouldn't eat this. It was all up to them. They tried things, they liked some things, they didn't like other things. Many of these children were extremely sick when they arrived at the ward. And by the end of the study, they were in incredibly good health. They did a remarkably good job of meeting their nutritional needs without ever, you know, reading a health magazine or seeing one of those infomercials about what you should eat, just based on what scientists call flavor feedback.
Clara Davis anticipated Fred Provenza's goat observations, but she tested her theories on humans. Children, given no information about food from anywhere but their own bodies, their only input was flavor. Their only feedback was internal. And they managed their health impeccably, just like goats.
Based on the relationship their brain developed between food out there in the world and its effects on their internal world, on their body, they figured out exactly what they should eat and shouldn't eat.
Here's the craziest part of the study.
So one of the most interesting examples from this Clara Davis study was of a baby that had rickets, which is a vitamin D deficiency.
For that child, Clara Davis's nurses included a food high in vitamin D in the daily offerings.
They offered this child cod liver oil. Now, everybody knows how absolutely disgusting and wretch-worthy cod liver oil is. It's like the pure distilled essence of rotten fish. Amazingly, this child drank the cod liver oil of his own volition until the rickets was gone and then never touched another drop.
Radio work can be just as dirty and exciting as hunting down public enemy number one. So when I get home, my old lady knows what I need and how. A warm, heaping bowl full of Loosener's castor oil flakes with real glycerin vibraphone. It doesn't just wash your mouth out. It cleans the whole system right on down the line. So come on, you little rookies. Tell your mom to get on it and do it every day. Just remember what the guys down at the precinct house sing.
Oh, it ain't no use if you ain't got the boost you get from Loosener's. Loosener's.
The all-weather breakfast.
I have a child the same age as the children in Clara Davis' study. I know how unlikely this sounds, but there are records. The conclusion Clara Davis drew from her study is the same one Fred Provenza drew. Humans must have a built-in, incredibly finely tuned feedback system. We know we have sensitive, carefully attuned sensory instruments. What if we, like goats, are designed to treat flavor as information? What if we're made to pick up signals from flavor about its macronutrients, micronutrients, phytochemicals, and so on? What if flavor is the edible world's way of communicating with our bodies?
Sheep can be infected with a parasite, and they will eat a tannin that cures them of the parasite. They would never eat this tannin ordinarily, but they, when they get the parasite, they eat it, and their parasite load diminishes. Mm. So their flavor system can not only nourish them, it can cure them. But don't forget, sheep don't know what parasites are. They don't know what tannins are. They're just nibbling this stuff going, this tastes good. Mm. That's why food tastes good, is because it's giving us something that we need.
This is Newsbite.
One of the biggest news stories of the year is the announcement by Scottish scientists of the successful cloning of a sheep, and we have two members of that team of scientists here in the studio with us today. Gentlemen.
Hello.
The question on everyone's mind is whether or not all of this will lead to the cloning of human beings.
I think not. The reason being that everything you could expect to gain out of cloning a human can be achieved by cloning sheep.
No, there must be some human characteristics that sheep don't possess.
Curiously, we haven't found any.
Really?
Sheep are just as good workers, perhaps better.
Yeah, after all, what's a weekend to a sheep, eh?
Yes.
And they eat their vegetarian diets, the envy of the New Age crowd.
But they have no capacity for abstract thought. They can't do mathematics.
No, not so.
For instance, counting sheep, that's been with us for centuries. Aye.
Gentlemen, what about art?
What about it?
We cloned 5 sheep from the tissue of a ewe that was famous for her melodious bleat.
We formed them into a very interesting rock band.
Called what?
U2.
Thank you, scientists Ian McKeon and Corin McCoy.
They have the giant arch. You talk about the arch.
I have seen a giant arch.
They have the arch, the golden arch.
Right,
the great golden arch. With the great arch, under the golden arches, you are buying the tongue sandwich.
The arch, right.
Very American food.
You know, this is called the soul food, under the arch. By the tongue, the soul food.
They sold it to you, right? That's where you go to buy it.
Sure.
It's where food is sold.
Food, yes.
Right, then, or if you're alone in a city, you can jack in a box. Which is a...
Wait a minute.
Only
you can't say that on the radio?
No. Why? Oh, this is non-commercial radio.
No, you only do it on television. You see the jack-in-the-box and the policeman.
All you got to do is punch the button and up it comes.
Hi, can I have your order, please?
The big colonel saws his...
Come in and see us.
The big colonel rotates, throwing up in the sky.
Rotates in the
I
sky.
Know him, yes,
the bucket. Kicking the bucket.
You saw the Colonel Saunders visit Thailand.
Is that so?
I saw that. That is
doing
true.
That's true, right?
That's by the huge market. Yeah.
That's where he gets the chickens.
That's where they get all the chickens, man. When the war is over, you will see no more chicken legs, man. You think that's chicken, huh?
Yes.
When the war is over, man, and we leave Cambodia and Laos and Newark, man, then you'll see no little legs anymore in the stand.
No chicken legs.
That's because all the
just
women...
Just jack in the box. That's all that's going to be left.
God, if that's all we have left to just jack in the box...
Yes.
I don't know. I think I'll jump down the hole.
Can I have mine with French fries?
Because I always say chicken only tastes like whatever you throw on top of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, so whatever you marinate, it's like tofu, right? It just soaks up flavor. Other than that, no one just cooks plain chicken.
It's like a tortilla chip. It's a texture vehicle.
You say in your book, it wasn't always that way. Chicken 60 years ago used to taste like what?
Like chicken, which is meaningless to someone who's never tasted chicken. But there's no good way to describe real chicken to no one who's never... Imagine trying to describe what an orange tastes like to someone who's never eaten an orange. You'd say it's fruity, it's bright, it's a little
citrusy.
Bit acidic, citrusy.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It's a tautology, essentially.
Right.
But chicken tasted like chicken. And when you eat a real chicken, it's an unbelievable experience.
What's a real chicken nowadays?
A real chicken, an heirloom chicken. A chicken... Essentially, a chicken that grows a lot more slowly and spends a lot of time outside eating the things that chickens always ate up until about 50 or 60 years ago, which is to say grasshoppers, bugs, leaves, blades of grass, seeds,
they
whatever
just
it wants,
peck,
worms.
Peck around, whatever
peck
was
around.
There.
Yeah.
Okay, and then breeding changed over the years. We started force-feeding chickens doing all
this
stuff.
It started in 1948 with the Chicken of Tomorrow contest. World War II, red meat was rationed. We didn't eat a whole lot of chicken back then. Chicken was expensive, and it was a Sunday night roast. Chicken consumption shot way up. With all that red meat being sent overseas, domestically, people started eating a lot more chicken. So this was a really good situation for the chicken people. But then the war ended, and they got scared because they thought, GIs are coming home, the rationing's going to end, what's going to happen to this booming market for chicken? So they held a contest. What they wanted to do was create a chicken that was essentially more efficient, grew faster, more meat, cheaper price. So they held a contest. They sent wax models of chickens around the country. This was in the States.
Okay.
And they said, whoever can grow a chicken that looks like this, the fastest wins.
And it was a plump wax model?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing like today's chickens. That's the thing. If you looked at that now, you'd think that's a scrawny-looking bird. But back then, that was a plump-looking bird. $10,000 in prize money, which was a lot of money back then. And they held regional contests, and then the finalists from those contests were in the National Chicken of Tomorrow contest. And there was a winner from Vantress Hatchery. It was a cross, I believe it was a New Hamp and a Cornish cross. These were two breeds. Back then we had the heirloom breeds. Mm-hmm. People knew about different breeds of chickens. And it won. It grew the fastest. An unbelievable slowpoke by today's standards, but a huge improvement by their standards. What really started to happen then was professional chicken breeding, where we started to get an idea of genetics and how we can essentially mold organisms by breeding them. Say, I'm going to cross this big fat chicken with this one that grows really quickly and get an offspring that is both fast-growing and big.
Mm.
And that's what they got, and we kept doing it. The Chicken of Tomorrow contest winner was just over 12 weeks old. We're now at around 6 weeks. And 12 weeks was like a sprint back then.
And how big? How many kilos?
It would have been, I'm trying to recall, the carcass would have been something like a 4 pound, so just under 2 kilos.
Okay.
We have gotten much, much better at it. We've improved feed efficiency, which is to say the amount of feed that it takes to get 1 pound of meat is now sitting at about 2 to 1. It used to be more like 4.5 to 1. Chicken has become unbelievably efficient. It's become abundant. It's cheap, and we eat a lot of it. We eat more chicken than any other meat. So by all those standards, this contest was enormously successful. This project of chicken improvement has been amazing. It was a total success. It smashed everyone's expectations. The question is, was there a price? Did we lose something?
And what was that price?
The price was flavor. Hmm. Chicken has completely lost its flavor for 2 reasons. One is that animals tend to get more flavorful as they get older. That's why lamb is milder than mutton. That's why veal is milder than beef. And that's why the chicken we eat today is milder than the chicken of 60 years ago, because we eat giant babies. Chickens are only 6 weeks old. This was still just a kind of a large-sized chick once upon a time. Mm. Now it's a full-grown chicken. This is a line out of a paper in Poultry Science. This is not any kind of an exaggeration. If a human baby grew as fast as a modern chicken, by the time it was 2 months old, it would weigh 660 pounds.
What?
We have bred race car chickens. It's unbelievable what they do. Hmm. It's unbelievable how efficient it is. But what's that chicken like?
Have we collectively sort of, when did we start understanding, hey, yes, we're, you know, breeding them faster, they're bigger, they're more efficient. Did we start noticing, wait a minute, these don't taste as good as the old guys?
Some people did. I mean, if you look in cookbooks, 1962, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Julia Child says straight up, modern chicken breeding has done wonders to produce a plump, fine-looking bird, but it tastes like teddy bear stuffing.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic.
This is the Norwegian Dolphin Fishing Club.
Yes, it says on the back of the float, a porpoise tastes like chicken.
Yes.
This is the tasteful float. It says mammals can be brain food too.
Yeah, catching them our porpoise in life is what it says on the front there. And he's wearing the top hat of doom.
It's called the top hat of doom.
It's also known as the plutocrat's beret.
Okay.
Oh, and the duck virus is beginning to spread.
The duck virus is spreading.
I can't breathe.
Yes. Look, that parrot is attacking that man. Oh, that poor man. Hold on to that tail.
I thought that was a duck.
No, that's a $10,000 azure blue, yellow ring-eyed parrot.
Tastes just like chicken.
It does to me, yes. I'll tell you, that's an expensive burger, but it's worth every penny of it.
Those bird burgers go down real easy.
And is the industry who, as you've laid out, I mean, is benefiting from this, or raising them faster, cheaper, all those things, are they realizing at any point in this trajectory that they're sacrificing quality for quantity? Do they care at all?
I don't think they care. They generally care what are people buying. They're driven by balance sheets. They're driven by the fact that they have to show a profit every quarter. So I think some of them are aware of it. I spoke to a scientist, a flavor expert, who long ago developed a diet, started adding herbs to chicken feed to get them to taste like something. And he approached an executive of a major chicken company who said, essentially, there was all sorts of reasons they couldn't use it. But he said, if you can figure out how to make a chicken taste like chicken, that I would buy. So they knew. They knew that chicken had changed.
Mm. It is interesting that you say that, because if you think about it, we flavor all kinds of things with, quote unquote, chicken flavoring.
Yes.
If chicken's so bland, what is chicken flavoring trying to recapture what a chicken once tasted like?
We actually add chicken flavoring to chicken.
That is not true.
It is. If you look on the ingredient panel, I've seen it in all sorts of supermarkets, more south of the border, you see as an ingredient in chicken, flavoring.
What do you mean? Cooked chicken?
A raw chicken.
Wait a minute. I'm going to my grocery store. I'm like, chicken breast, pull it off. And you're telling me at some places that's been infused with chicken flavoring.
Yes. Pork as well, beef as well. Because nothing tastes like anything anymore. So you got to give it flavor.
Because of us, it's morning in America. breakfast, honey?
Thanks. Hey, is this real pork?
Because of us, people in the Great Plains are just plain doing things. Little things, like taking money from machines.
Hey, stop, kid. I'm not a machine.
Because of us, they're roasting East Coast marshmallows on the West Coast.
Wow, these taste like pork.
We're the people of U.S. Plus. Guess what we do?
Chemistry? Transportation? Pork?
Kind of. U.S. Plus. We own the idea of America.
Thanks, Ed, and this story is breaking fast from all over the land. And speaking of break fast, why don't you do it the Jimmy Clicker way, the healthful way, the American way, by eating chemical cereals produced by industry and sold by crew-cut college graduates in New York advertising agencies who once had higher ambitions. Isn't that right, Dwight?
Yeah, that's right as grain, Jimmy. American pork-fed grain, that is, blasted through nuclear reactors to achieve high-yield taste with no nutritious after-effects. That's right. That's the main ingredient in new Placebos, the instant energy breakfast cereal with the look of real food. You know, folks, just pour a heaping bowl full of handy bowl full of non-dairy granulated milk over a big bowl of Placebos, add more sugar, and averting your face, hold under a running faucet for 1 minute. What's the result? Satisfied, happy children, face down on the kitchen table and ready to be packed neatly into buses for any transfer to school or work. And that's new Placebos, friends, for an orderly start to your busy day.
The message is that we should care a lot more about the way real food tastes, because it's one of the most important things we need to be doing as a society is eating better. The cost to our poor diet is very high. Obesity is the number one preventable cause of disease and the number two preventable cause of death. Costs us billions of dollars. They had to change the name of of adult onset diabetes to type 2 diabetes because kids are getting it now. Mm. We used to eat food to live, to survive, and now it seems to be the thing that's killing us. So I see this as a real problem. We've had all these sort of battles over nutrition and what we should be eating, but on some level we've known for an awfully long time the answer is to eat more whole foods, to eat more fruits and vegetables, more whole cuts of meat, less processed food. If that food doesn't taste good, people aren't going to eat it. The truth is we don't all have these ironclad wills and can somehow will ourselves into eating. It's like preaching abstinence and sex. It doesn't really work. Mm. We go for where the pleasure is. That's how we're wired. So what we need to do is get the pleasure back into real food if we want people to eat it. I see that as an extremely important project, like public policy. It's essential that we make the right food delicious.
You know, I want to get back to the chicken just for a minute, because I was out with some friends the other night. Somehow chicken came up. They were served at this dinner party. One friend said, oh, I don't like chicken. Does it taste like anything? I was like, chicken's delicious. And I was like, chicken just, you know, whatever you put on chicken. Anyway, we broke out into an argument over this, which makes me want to raise this point. Isn't taste just subjective? Like, one thing that you find flavorful, I don't. Isn't that just subjective?
There is a subjective quality to it, but it's not entirely subjective. It's rooted to something. I believe it's rooted ultimately to nutrition. I mean, there's cultural influences, there's trends, there's what your mom made for you. I would also argue you can make modern chicken delicious. We do it all the time. About half of chicken is called further processed now. That means chicken nuggets, chicken patties, chicken cordon bleu. That stuff's all flavored. So there's a way to make chicken delicious the same way we make Doritos delicious. When you look at how you have to cook a modern chicken, I mean, this is one of the reasons no one cooks anymore, because it's so hard. When you look at how chefs cook chicken, they brine them. You've got to brine it for like 12 hours. Making a brine, you've got to boil water, dissolve salt and sugar in it, then you've got to put garlic, rosemary, all sorts of things. Then you've got to dunk your chicken in there, keep it cold, so it's really hard to fit a thing of brine in your refrigerator. Then you have to flavor it with herbs and spices and cook it. No one has that kind of time anymore. Only restaurants can cook a chicken like that. 60 years ago, chicken recipes were unbelievably simple, just salt and pepper. You think these people must have not had a palate or something, because you try that with a modern chicken and it's disgusting. I mean, it just doesn't work. But when you cook a real chicken, it's amazing how easy it is to cook because it's so flavorful.
I never in my life remember a more seasonable year than we have here enjoyed. And if we have once but kine, horses, and sheep, I make no question but that men might live as contented here as any part of the world. For fish and fowl we have great abundance. Fresh cod in summer is but coarse meat with us. Our bay is full of lobsters all the summer and affords a variety of other fish. The country wants only industrious men to employ, for it would grieve your hearts if, as I, you had seen so many miles together by goodly rivers uninhabited.
Being a young man, I mingled freely with the young women and girls. I have spent many pleasant hours with them when I was supposed to be under my blanket, and they have many times sung their mountain songs for me, this being all that they could do to repay my kindness. And with all my association with Indian girls from October 1829 to March 26th, 1839, I did not meet one who was a moral prostitute. They are kind and tender, and many of them are beautiful. Many of them are beautiful. Many of them are beautiful. Many
Besides,
of them are beautiful.
What could
many
they see but a hideous and many desolate wilderness many full of wild beasts and many wild men? And what multitudes there many might of be of them, they
many
knew
of them are
not.
Beautiful. Many of them are 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 beautiful.
Don't tell them.
The fresh chef. Ah. Tonight, my dear one, we are going to prepare and eat and enjoy together a dish from the exotic faraway land of Casablanca in Morocco. Tonight for you and me and us, we make beignets au banane, or translated, banana hats. To prepare this luscious dish, take 1 hour in advance to shower and pretty up. Then, meet him at the door. He will be carrying 2 eggs and, of course, 9 or 10 big bananas. Don't slam the door in his face, but welcome him warmly like this. Being careful not to bruise or overexcite the bananas. Then, place the bananas in comfortable places around the house. On a big sofa, in an easy chair, on top of the TV, in front of the TV. Don't worry, well, just let your imagination go wild and leave them there for a few days at least. This way, the bananas become like old friends. And you know, it is always best to cook with and eat a good friend. Now, slip out of something comfortable, and we are ready to begin. First, assemble and scrub vigorously the ingredients with lye soap. And after washing your mouth out with it, arrange the eggs and the bananas deliciously upon a cracked terrace, thusly. Oh, then pull out the wheat sticks, farina, rice bodies, and groat cakes. Crumble them and pit them. And put this aside. We won't be using it until next week. When I show you how to make salt pudding. Now, pick up the 2 entire eggs and kiss them so. Then, covering your eyes if possible, smash them with a lead cudgel till the little white part look like paint flakes. Then mix well while adding progressively some artificial milk. Play with this with your fingers and rub it on your face. Then let it all stand out for a while, an hour or two, until the scum on the top becomes sticky. While waiting, you can watch TV with a banana or something. Now for the bananas. Gather them all together and épluche them swiftly before they know what happens. And put them also into the hot fudge we prepared last week. And, sitting them under a rather high flame, burn them until mushy. Scrape off the crust,
Brush and powder them with soft powder. Clam seasoning and ground glass to taste. Then, my darling, open a fine bottle of Japanese wine. Preferably Nippon Cadet Odd 69. Turn out the lights. Sit on the floor. And eat them in the dark. And darling, remember, please, always serve this dish hot. Piping hot. Thank you.